The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello, this is Brian E. Lau, creator of Staunch Ambition, and you are listening to the PVD Cast by John Orwater. Or wait. Orlando? Yes. John Orlando.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your host, Mr. PVD MVP himself, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 199. I know, we're one away from 200, and while that's a huge accomplishment and a huge milestone, I'd really like to just focus on this episode and let me tell you a little bit about my guest, who is going to be joining me, and that guest is Mr. Colin Devonshire. He's the creator of a graphic novel called By the Time I Get to Dallas. Now, at the time of the recording of our conversation, the Kickstarter campaign had kicked off. It was probably, I'd say, halfway through, but hats off to Colin. It was funded in the first few days, and that rarely happens with crowdfunding. And so that's awesome for Colin that there are so many people that want to hear this tale, which is kind of an apocalyptic tale focusing on a protagonist named Rudy. And Colin is a really interesting writer because he has a background as being an ER doctor, and he pulls a lot of his experiences into the book. And you know what? I'm going to let Colin tell you all about it here just in a few moments. But before we do that, let me go ahead here and jump on into our great sponsor for this episode. And of course, I'm talking about World's Greatest Comics. They're located at 5992 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. They have comics, they have toys, they have comic book supplies, graphic novels, and various collectibles. So stop on over to the store and say hi to Jeff or the fine folks over there at World's Greatest Comics. Or if you want, you can even check them out online, wgcomics.com, or they're on Facebook at facebook.com/wgcomics. And if you stop over or you interact through the internet with those folks, let them know you heard about World's Greatest Comics right here on the PVD Cast. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I sit down with Colin Devonshire and we talk about his graphic novel, By the Time I Get to Dallas. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I'm sitting down here this evening with Colin Devonshire. Colin, how are you this evening?
I'm doing terrific. This is my very first podcast. So
really? Yeah. Oh, man. Well, welcome.
No one's ever asked me to do this before.
Well, welcome to the world of podcasting.
Thank you.
You are the creator of a book called By the Time I Get to Dallas, and it's going to have five books for the whole entire tale, but right now you're just working on book one. Can you give the listeners kind of a brief summary of the project?
Absolutely. So the story is what happens when 80% of Homo sapiens begin migrating to one spot on the globe, and follows the tale of a failing medical student named Rudy Deckert who must save or possibly destroy humanity. So it's a little bit of a different take on the apocalypse you may think you know, through the eyes of a medical student. So really the arc is the coming of age tale of a medical student, but set in a kind of a fantastic, epic, scary, but also fairly humorous end of the world. So that's the pitch. And it's a 200-page story, which is written, and divided roughly into five books, though each book seems to get a little longer as we work on it. I have an incredible art team. chief among them, Juan Francisco Moyano, who's my penciler, who stuck with me for quite a while on this. And we've completed book one. It is in the can, just some lettering, a little bit of lettering to go. And so the book is done and ready to get printed. And we've launched Kickstarter just about 2 weeks ago. And we hit our funding goal in 7 hours, which was astounding. And now we're continuing to grow from there and looking at having a really solid finish to the campaign and a fantastic looking book when it's all done. And then we'll plow on and do book two. Part of book two is already actually complete in terms of artwork. And like I said, the story's all written, but man, it's a lot of work getting 200 pages of art done. Yeah, I've had my work cut out for me with it.
No doubt. So what was your inspiration for the book and for the tale of Rudy?
So, it's come together over a long period of time, but the impetus for that tale was literally a dream. I know people say this stuff, but I literally had a dream where I was outside in a suburban yard raking leaves, and everybody around me was doing the same. And then one by one, people just kind of looked off into the distance, started dropping their rakes, and all just walked away. And that was about all that happened in the dream. But in the dream, I kind of knew that everybody was just leaving to go to one place. And that was the kernel of this story. I woke up at 4 a.m. and, wrote it down. And I kind of worked on a little treatment of that story for a couple of years, not really having anything to do with it. Didn't know if it was a novel or what, and didn't really have any plans for it. But I'm an emergency doctor, and I've been working for about 5 years, and I discovered that my practice had a little known offering, which is a sabbatical where you can take some time off. And the moment I heard about it, I said, oh, I'm going to do that, and didn't know what I was going to do. But then this story was in the back of my head. And so I decided I'd take a month and try to live the life of a writer just by sitting in my basement writing for a month. And first thought it might be a movie, but thought the odds of making a movie were pretty slim. And, I've been into comic books over the years. And once I kind of hit on the idea of it being a graphic novel, it kind of grew from there. And, I keep coming up with hitting times where I think I could stop. It'd be much easier to just stop. But the story just has still not gotten out of my head. And once I hit on the idea of a main character being a medical student, I realized I could really kind of put my life and experiences in there on the page in the guise of a kind of, apocalyptic fiction, but really make it about what it's like to become a doctor, which is a story that I don't know if we've seen much of in comics.
Yeah. And I was going to mention that is a very unique point of view, because as an ER doctor, I guess you've seen a lot of things, some good and some bad. And so that is going to be funneled into your book through the eyes of Rudy. And I think that's a very interesting point of view.
I think it's going to be fun. To be honest, when I started this project, I wanted to get away from medicine. I do medicine all day, and my idea was to do something totally different. But I didn't have a character. I had this idea, this sort of migration story, but I needed an actual protagonist. And finally it hit me, if you were a medical student, I could actually put some of my kind of expert knowledge and experience into a story and come from a place of, writing what you know. And once I hit on that, I was like, well, I guess I'm going to be writing about medicine after all. And but try to do it in a fun way. It's not gratuitous in terms of the medical stuff, but I think it gets some of the little moments along the way. Really, it's about his journey to learn how to care for other people. He's not a good person when the story starts. He's pretty flawed, not in medicine for the right reasons. And really, his journey is going from being kind of a jerk to actually learning to care for others and realizing what the key to medicine is all about. And he just happens to be doing that while the world is ending around him. So.
Did you pull any experiences that you had in the ER? Like, for an example, if there was a particular, somebody came in with a broken leg and you're like, oh, I remember that person came in. They were such a, pleasant patient or whatnot, despite their injury. And did you bring some of that in?
Yeah. There's bits and pieces. Some of it is kind of an amalgam of a lot of different, I've been in a million different, traumas, and the one that we have to start the book is kind of a typical one, though maybe, you know, stylized a little bit to kind of make it work on the page a little better. But the basic idea of, you know, the excitement, the drama, the you know, the good and the bad all happening so close together that, you know, when you're a medical student, it's all hitting you all at once, and it's, you know, it's a powerful feeling, but it's terrifying. And then as you gradually gain more responsibility throughout your training, you know, you have to be able to function, and people depend on you in that environment. And so trying to get that arc is what Rudy is going to follow through his story. So it's there, but it's bits and pieces. You know, there's definitely some characters there that are based on real people. I'm sure as I go through there with a little more detail, as we flesh out later stories, there'll be even more as I kind of focus it. But absolutely, it's really about kind of overcoming fear and taking care of the person in front of you, and goes into the whole theme of the whole story, which is how human beings treat each other. And as this migration happens, the migrants that we call travelers are different from everybody else, and it's not clear what their motivations are, why they're going to Dallas, they act weird. And so how we treat them is, the big sort of message of the story, and then through the eyes of Rudy, whose, you know, job is to care for everybody who crosses his path.
When you, and I think you kind of hinted on this, but when you got the offer to take the sabbatical from your position, mm-hmm. Was that a tough decision?
Oh, not at all. You know, it was it's not paid time. So, you know, you have to kind of figure out how you're going to make it work. And I think you think of sabbatical, you think about people, you know, traveling off to Africa and researching, sure. You know, meerkats or whatever. But this was just time off to do something for self-enrichment. And, you know, I couldn't take a lot of time off, and I wasn't going to, you know, travel because, you know, we had two small children, and I couldn't just go gallivanting across the globe. So I had to do something close to home that was going to just sort of feed a part of me that, you know, I wasn't touching normally. And I've always been interested in writing since I was a kid, and sort of done it sporadically. And to actually just sit down for, you know, 8 to 10 hours a day at a desk with a cork board and story and, you know, cards, and make a storyboard and an outline and page breakdowns. You know, I just went from zero. I mean, I'd never made a comic book, didn't know what was involved, and just sort of approached it in a step-by-step manner to try to actually do it as if I was a professional. It was an incredible, incredible month. It just got me so jazzed. And by the end of that month, I had the story outlined, and actually the whole story broken down page by page. Now it's ended up doubling in size since then. But it really was a fantastic experience to just sit down and write all day. It was awesome.
So if I may ask real quick, with sure. the rest of the creative team that's behind you, and you have a pretty solid team, mm-hmm. when did they come into the fold? Was this after the 30-day sabbatical?
Yeah, it was quite a bit after. So my goal, like with that 30 days, was by the end, like have the story laid out page by page. My idea was to have it be like, you know, I forget what I was thinking, 4 24-page books. Because in my mind, I thought under 100 pages, I might actually be able to get that done in my lifetime. And that took another, I think it ended up taking me a total of 2 years to script the entire thing, you know, beginning to end, you know, panel by panel. And I was overwriting it, so it was probably taking a lot longer than I needed to. But so after I'd really had a, you know, a couple drafts of that first story, I was like, okay, I got to do something with this. And I was on a Reddit, oh, I forget what it's called, Comic Collaborative, or yeah, I forget the name of it. I should have looked it up and give them some credit, but it's been a couple of years. But it's a Reddit subgroup where, you know, artists and writers and creators all get together. And that was my first kind of, you know, social media kind of approach to, you know, learning what was out there. And so I just lurked there for a while, and I ended up putting out like kind of an initial pitch, you know, as a feeler to see what people thought of it. And it got trashed, which which was really helpful. They don't pull punches on Reddit for sure, but also some incredible, you know, feedback. And then I happened to notice Juan Fran, who, you know, posted a thing saying, you know, I'm in between projects, I'm a professional artist. And his art just immediately grabbed me as realistic, really, you know, not a stylized anime superhero kind of thing. It was kind of realistic artwork that really seemed to get at the soul of the characters. And reached out to him with a pitch, and he was, you know, into it. And we agreed to do an initial treatment that we would pitch to publishers. Ended up making 9 pages. And I got to tell you, the first time he actually sent me back sketches of the characters, I couldn't believe it, because they were straight out of my head and I knew they were going to work. It is a really powerful and terrifying feeling. You just sit there and you write a couple of silly words on a page and you send it to some person who's half the globe away. You know, he's in Spain. And hours or days later, these pictures come back to you and they're the things that you wrote down. Like, I don't feel justified that someone's spending the time writing down my dumb ideas, but I do pay them, so I guess it works out, but it hardly seems fair. It's a pretty crazy process as a writer who doesn't really draw. So got him first, and then he hit me to his brother, who's an amazing colorer, Jay Moyano, and he got me in touch with Dario Marin, who's our inker. And so the core of the team kind of came together from there, and then I found our original letterer, Sean Aldridge, who's gone on to bigger and better things writing for Vertigo. And now we've got James Reed, who's like a total pro. So I have a team that's, you know, way, way better than I deserve. But they've been patient.
You know, and one member of that team that has, his name has been mentioned many times on the PVD cast, Neil Anderson, did one of your covers as well.
Oh yeah, we got to mention him. Yeah. So he came in, you know, late in the process, back when this book was, you know, mostly done. But I had seen his one of his covers for Brian Lau's Inferno. What do they call it? Inferno City.
Inferno City. Yes.
Inferno City comic about Detroit firefighters, and it just haunted me. I love this cover immediately, and I was like, I'm just gonna feel him out and see if he's, you know, up for doing a variant for me, and. It worked out fantastically, and, you know, I had a creepy idea for a cover for him, and he sent the whole thing back again. You know, 2 days later, I'm like, oh my God, he actually did it. Terrifying. It's horrifying. It's exactly what I told him to do. So I got to say, as you start to get into this and you see how many amazing artists are out there, and you just kind of hit them up and say, hey, would you draw me this picture if I give you a little money? And they do it, and it looks awesome. Kind of a weird racket.
So I guess you could say so far things are going superb, because you're fully funded by Kickstarter. And by the recording of this, you technically still have 13 days left, but you're fully funded. You've got to feel stoked about that, because that's a huge obstacle out of the way. You got a great team. So everything has been going super smooth. But has there been any obstacles or hurdles that you had to jump over in the short amount of time that you've been working on this book?
Well, yeah, I mean, it hasn't been that short. it's been six years, you know, so that sabbatical was over 6 years ago. Yeah, you know, there's definitely been tough times. You know, our initial idea was to pitch this to publishers, so we did our initial treatment and sent it around and got good response. You know, got it, you know, in front of the editorial board at a pretty big publisher. But man, that is a hard racket to break into when you've got, you know, no track record. I mean, I'm nobody. So I needed to do that. I needed to know that I tried it. And then when it didn't work out, it definitely kind of put me into a bit of a funk. I questioned, you know, what is the story? You know, is it right? You know, what's lacking with it? And one of the amazing parts about it is I got to work with a real editor. His name is Matthew Idelson, who spent a lot of time with, Marvel, DC on some big books, now works, I think he's chief creative or editor, big editor of some sort at Dynamite. And he was in between gigs when the DC Comics had moved from East Coast to West Coast. So I got hooked up with him. And so he came on as just a freelance editor. And man, that was amazing to actually have somebody who makes these books day in, day out, and just sort of go through the nitty gritty of page by page, like what works, what doesn't, and just talk about the nuts and bolts of making a good story. And that was a blast. I would do that all day if I could. Yeah. So that, but he helped, you know, kind of get me through that rejection. And then I had to go back and kind of rewrite a, you know, write a new beginning and kind of just decide whether I wanted to go through with this or not after, you know, really putting a lot of time and then can kind of smack down. And that took a while. And then we've been another few years since then, you know, I just decided, heck, I'm just going to pay the artist now to do the whole book so that it's done. And worst thing that happens is I have one really nice copy of a comic book. And if anybody else ever sees it, great. And then the Kickstarter thing is just, man, it's a lot of work. It's crazy. So I was really just afraid of that process for a long time because it seemed like such a commitment. And it was, but we have a good product, I think. And spent a lot of time kind of on that launch, and the launch, you know, really did a great job. So now we just got to get that book out there and crank on number two. But it's pretty satisfying to actually have people that want to see it.
So I assume that your family was very supportive of you trying this endeavor.
Absolutely. I mean, God, I must have been really annoying, you know, because I've been really in my own head with this thing for a long time. And, you know, so every once in a while I get to show them a script or new pictures and stuff, but it comes really slowly, you know. So if I'd just done it as a short story or a novel, I would have been done years ago. But so they've been very supportive. My wife Ethel's been awesome about it. My parents are pretty excited. My son is a big comic guy on his own. He's sort of grown up with me, you know, doing the story pretty much his whole life. So he's been like in on it from the beginning, and he's his own cartoonist who's got a lot more talent than I do. So yeah, there's been a lot of people that have been very supportive. I think the idea of, you know, middle-aged, you know, doctor with kids and all that kind of stuff that goes along with those responsibilities, just sort of doing something that seems sort of frivolous, like a comic book. I think that appeals to people. I think people like that idea, and they maybe think, oh, well, you know, if I were going to do something, you know, dumb with a little free time, like what would I do? And I like to encourage other people to follow their, you know, follow whatever frivolous sounding dream they might have. And I think that's appealed to a lot of people, which has helped the campaign quite a bit, I think.
Yeah, I really like that message. I really do, Colin. I totally agree with that. You know, if you have a silly dream, quote unquote, so what? Mm-hmm. Go pursue it. Find out if you can do it. So that really resonates with me. I really agree with that statement. I'm going to mention that you also, through the campaign with Kickstarter, raised mm-hmm. some money for the Refugee and Immigrant Center for Education and Legal Services. Mm-hmm. Could you care to explain a little more about that organization?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I think it was late in the process. I mean, maybe even just a week before I was ready to launch, that I just felt like I was missing some component of this that just didn't feel right. And then I realized that it was, you know, a outreach and charity kind of component to this, where, you know, this is not in any way meant to be a political story, but it looks that way. You know, when I started writing this, I had this original idea 8 years ago. The idea was not to write about immigration. It was really more about free will and, you know, religion and faith versus science. And that's, to me, kind of the heart of the story. But, you know, it's hard to get away from the parallels to the things we see on the southern border now. And that story, you know, blew up, you know, long after my scripts were written. And so I realized I really needed to attack that head on, because you could look at a cover or look at a picture or two and think maybe I'm making a statement about immigration policy in one way or another. And, you know, I didn't really want to hit it that hard on the nose. But like I said earlier, the real point of the story is how we treat each other. And it's hard to avoid that we're not treating people very well at the border right now. So I wanted to find a, you know, a service organization that addressed refugees and separated families. And Raisis has been, had a good run on social media through good Facebook kind of fundraising, and they're really on the front lines. And I just wanted to put that out there from the beginning so that people know, you know, where I'm coming from and sort of my viewpoint about the story, that it's, I didn't want it to be exploitative towards the immigrant plight. but wanted to address it in some way. And that's resonated with a lot of people, where I really got some, you know, comments and some backers who hooked up with this, you know, specifically because they liked that message, which is gratifying. That was the point. And yeah, we're doing 5% of gross proceeds from the campaign. And so, you know, it's starting to add up.
Is that organization based in Boston, or is it based in the...
No, that's based in Texas. Yeah, they've been around for, I want to say, a couple decades. But based in Texas, providing legal aid services to people seeking asylum, the families that have been separated. You know, the stuff that's happening every day, they're there.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk a little bit about the Trinity Project, which is an ongoing webcomic that you have going on. Can you tell the listeners at home what that story is all about?
Yeah, so my advice is, you know, if you've got one comic you're making and it's taking a lot of work and you're not getting it finished, probably the best thing you should do is then decide to make a second comic at the exact same time and then see how things go, which is essentially how this works. So it was, where are we? Was it last year? You know, my art team for Dallas had kicked this idea that, like, you know, if we're going to go forward and we're going to try to kickstart this thing and make it happen with Dallas, maybe you should do a web comic as well that can start building some audience and, you know, find an artist who can kind of do everything quickly and then put out some pages there for some content. And, you know, I liked the idea, even though it was completely insane. But what I really liked about it was, you know, Dallas has been written. I was waiting for the artist to kind of do their thing. But, like, I wanted more experience just putting out pages, like, you know, working with artists, making a page, go out there into the world that people see. And I hooked up with Jacinto Jimenez, another guy actually from Spain but lives in France, and friends, I believe, with my other artists somehow. And so he was game, and so he's the one-man show doing all the line art, color, lettering. And so the story was basically meant to be kind of a prequel to the Dallas migration, where we learn that this migration may have happened before and may have been even larger than what we realize. And so we follow the story of a young archaeologist in Texas, where they start to find evidence of this, of a previous migration. And so that was just a fun thing to, where I felt like Dallas is this big story where it's, everything's kind of like set. And then I just said, wouldn't it be fun to just write a page at a time and just kind of see what happens? And so that's what Trinity's been. And of course it still ends up taking a ton of time, and, you know, it's a lot more work than you think it's going to be, but it's been cool to just sort of live a scene at a time and just think, okay, I'm going to do this scene. It's going to come out to these three pages, and then I'll worry about the next scene. And I have an arc for it, but, you know, when all goes really well, that's going to actually kind of tie in, and the two stories will actually meet in a couple places along the way. And, you know, if it all works out well, like the best kind of writing from Lost, it will kind of turn your head and you see some connections that you didn't realize. And it gives me basically kind of, you know, a whole other way to tell a story. But yeah, it's basically doubling the amount of work I've had, which was perhaps unwise.
How often do you get new panels or new parts to that webcomic? How often do they come out?
It's been pretty sporadic. You know, the idea was to build up a backlog and put one out maybe once every 2 weeks. But the Kickstarter and getting the Dallas book has really taken precedence right now. So we are kind of burned through most of the, you know, I think we've done a total of maybe 16 pages or so. Which is awesome. It's a good little first volume that I think gives you the idea of where this story's going. I would love to get to devote more time to it once I get out from under the Kickstarter campaign. But luckily, you can actually get the Trinity Project printed as part of this campaign, and also it's out for free on Webtoons called The Trinity Project. And yeah, you know, the best lesson is, if you want to make a comic, make a comic. I don't remember who said that, but I've been trying to just do that.
I'm going to interrupt my conversation with Colin for just one moment to talk to you about World's Greatest Comics. It's the one-stop shop for all your comic book-related needs. They've got single issues, graphic novels, toys, and even collectibles. And if you want to make sure you don't miss a single issue of your favorite comic, sign up for their pull system and you'll even get 20% off pre-ordered comics. That's a deal, folks! So check them out online at wgcomics.com or jump on over to the store located at 5992 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio, and let them know that you heard it from me, John Orlando, on the PVDcast.
All right. I'd still got a few more questions about yourself, Colin, but sure, one absolutely. Final one about the project real quick. And
yeah.
I'm going to be honest, it's a loaded question. I'm not sure you can mm-hmm. answer it. But mm-hmm. the first thing that popped in my head when I read about mm-hmm. the project, why Dallas?
You know,
and I bet you can't answer that, can you?
No, I can. I can, oh, okay. But it's not a very satisfying answer. The first real simple answer is when I woke up from that dream, it was Dallas. I have no idea why, but that's where they were going. And when I sat down and wrote it, the first sentence I wrote was, when the zombie apocalypse finally came, they weren't so bad. They didn't want to eat our brains. They just wanted to go to Dallas. And I've taken the word zombie out of it and massaged those sentences a little bit, but it's basically still the first line in the story 8 years later. So I always like the rhythm by the time I get to Dallas. It sort of asks a question. Well, what happens? What happens by the time you get to Dallas? It sort of starts the story and starts you wondering. And I love the Public Enemy song, by the time I get to Arizona. I always love that tune. And then Dallas was a place that I thought if my character starred in Boston, which is a place I know, I can get him there without doing a ton of research, and I can get him there in, you know, 96 pages because it's not that far. And so then the story just kind of gelled from there. So when I'd done, you know, by the time I get to Bangkok, I wouldn't known what I was writing, and it would have been a much bigger story. So it's not a bunch of satisfying answers, but there's nothing inherently special or unspecial about Dallas. It is a single point on the map that, for some reason, humans have developed a kind of a homing pattern towards. And that'll get explored throughout both stories. But yeah, a lot of people on my Facebook ads keep responding. Again, a lot of people who live in Dallas saying, why the hell would they want to go to Dallas? And they read the book for that. But it's not, you know, anything specific to the city.
Okay. And I'm just going to tell you right now, I thoroughly enjoyed your Public Enemy reference because I was singing that song while doing research today. I uh-huh. kept singing it. See, great minds think alike, Colin.
I've always had that line in my head, and like, that was always going to be the story. And they tell you with comics, you want a short title, you know, that you can jump out at you from across, you know, across the comic shop. And by the time I get to Dallas, it's not that. It's hard to fit on the page, but I don't care. My book.
There you go.
That's the story. The publisher picked me up and wanted to give me a different title. Fine, go ahead. But now it's my book. So.
Well, you've actually written articles for the Journal of American Medical Association, correct?
Yeah, correct. One.
So,
one
article. What were they? What were they about, or what was it about?
So it was actually creative writing. So in medical school, we had a little creative writing group, just sort of an extracurricular thing that we did, and I wrote like a two-page treatment about basically kind of proto Rudy, you know, this kind of the nuts and bolts, like the kind of the kernel of this story about just what it's like to be a new student fresh into the ER and just seeing these things for the first time, the good and the bad. So I wrote like a two-page story, and it really focused on a you know, attending physician, the physician I was following around, and about what it was really like to be a doctor when you're not one yet. And so it's called A Simple Observation. And I wrote it as part of this class. And there's a humanities section of the Journal of the American Medical Association where they write, you know, poetry and prose. And so I said, screw it, I'll send it off. And they actually accepted it. So, you know, I'm not an academician. I have not done a lot of research over my medical career, but I have been published in JAMA. And so that's cool.
Yeah, that is. And I'll be absolutely 100% honest with you. I just assumed JAMA was nothing but medical stuff, like boring, normal. Like, I didn't know there was a prose or poetry part to it.
Yeah, there's a little bit there. And they a lot of good photographs. A lot of doctors have buy really nice cameras and go all over the world to take good photographs. But there's okay. also there's a writing section. And then there's also a not related to JAMA, but a worthwhile thing to check out called Graphic Medicine, which is a website that runs a publication, I believe, and also conferences about sort of the intersection of visual arts and medicine. And it's people writing about medicine as patients, as clinicians, as artists looking from the outside looking in. And they put all this stuff out on their website, and there's some pretty powerful stuff. Mine's a little more straight ahead comic booky than a lot of the stuff you'll see there, but Graphic Medicine is a pretty vibrant community, and I got to have a spotlight about Dallas on there that's up now on their site. So yeah, this stuff happens more than you might think.
Yeah, I just never knew that. I learned something today. I just, there you go. You know, again. Well, you stated you are a fan of comic books. So yeah. Can I ask real quick, what were some of your favorites, or what are some of your favorites?
Sure. So, you know, I grew up in the 80s and started with the X-Men, Chris Claremont, 180s, I want to say, right around that era. You know, went back to John Byrne runs with, you know, the Death of Phoenix and all of that. That was kind of my touchstone growing up. But then I happened to be right in the wheelhouse of, you know, graphic novels becoming a thing. So Frank Miller's Dark Knight, Batman Year One, Alan Moore with Swamp Thing, and The Watchmen. Those were really like the key things for me growing up that still stick with me. And so I got back into comics, I got maybe like 10 years ago, and started, you know, I think it was X-Men versus Avengers, and that was kind of fun. And the DC, like New 52, you know, that's a relaunch every like 20 minutes. But it was fun to get back into it. And then I started getting more into more of the offbeat titles, indie titles. And, you know, so some of the ones that I really love, Brian K. Vaughan. So I've just started reading Saga recently, and it's fantastic. Ex Machina was the, I don't know if I'm saying that right. One he'd done maybe 10 years ago. That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Brian Wood, I like a lot of his stuff. So just finding stuff that wasn't like the run of the mill superhero, but really gripping stuff. And what else? I love Daredevil. I'm still a huge Daredevil fan. Frank Miller Daredevil runs are, you know, gold for me. And then my son, you know, picks up all sorts of stuff. So I still keep up with what's going on with the Avengers and all. It's there's so much to choose from that it's overwhelming. But now I get, you know, vast majority of my comics just from Kickstarter campaigns, you know, because I'm always on there just looking at stuff to compare to and get, you know, inspiration from how they're doing their stories, doing their production, doing their campaign. So end up, you know, buying stuff spur of the moment, and that definitely pays off, because it's incredible how many people are out there and can do this, you know, with relatively, you know, little resources. It's kind of amazing. Everybody except me, it takes me 10 years to get everything done, but other people seem to be cranking through it.
So if I can ask, what's on tap for book two? You said that you've already started some preliminary work on book two. Yeah. Is there anything that you can reveal about what to expect with book two?
Well, you know, this is a road story. This is an epic journey. And so the journey's got to start. So the first book really is the heaviest lifting, I'd say, and probably the darkest of the books. But Rudy's got to get out on the road. He's got to go and try to rescue his girlfriend, Karen, who is caught up in the migration. She's on her way to Dallas. So he wants to try to get up ahead of her. But at the same time, he realizes, well, that makes me a traveler, and maybe I want to go to Dallas, and maybe I'm one of the affected. And so that's the sort of push-pull about, you know, wondering what your true motivations are. And along the way, he's going to get his butt kicked in all sorts of ways. But first, he's got to get out of Boston, which is going to be difficult. And he'll need to meet up some, you know, you got to find a beat, you got to find the team, you got to find the B story along the way. I think he's got a pretty good cast of characters he's going to start to meet up with. He's going to steal a super yacht. He's going to, you know, he's going to have a plane land on him. There's going to be all sorts of crazy stuff. So and we start to deliver on the promise. Yeah, it's the fun and games. The fun and games section of the story is coming in the next two books, definitely.
There you go. I was going to say, there you have it. It's going to be all kinds of chaos going on for Rudy. Mm-hmm. So let's talk here as we're getting up to our time here. Where sure. can folks get book one? because I know, as I mentioned earlier on, we're recording in the midst of the Kickstarter, but by the time this episode posts, the Kickstarter will be done. So where can folks pick up book one if they missed out on it at Kickstarter time?
That's a fantastic question that I don't have a great answer for yet. It will be available through a web store. Probably the best thing to go to is just going to be my website, which is Pitt Doc Press. So P-I-T-D-O-C press.com, which is where it'll be the clearinghouse for everything related to both the Trinity Project and Dallas. And once the story is available for sale, we'll probably run at least a link to whatever web store we settle on through there. So yeah, that's a fantastic question I wasn't prepared for, but it will be available. Certainly web form, and then I'll work on micro distribution in stores around the Boston area at least. And then whether paper distribution, you know, through online store or Amazon, I got to approach those questions as well. But it will definitely be out there. So pitdocpress.com.
How about if you got any social medias, Colin, that you'd like to let the folks know about where they can follow you as well?
Yeah. So I don't Twitter because I'm just too old. And it's terrifying to me. But our Facebook page is active, which is By the Time I Get to Dallas. So it's easy enough to find. And the nice thing about Kickstarter is those pages remain live. You know, so you can always get to wherever you need to get to through the Kickstarter page as well. So, yeah, but Facebook is primarily where I do the social media thing because that's the only thing I really understand.
Gotcha. And, of course, Kickstarter.com, just search for By the Time I Get to Dallas and whammo, it'll be right there. So
it should be there. If someone else steals my title, then we'll have to fight. No one else would because it's too long. It's too long and funky. So.
I was going to say, are you going to duel like Hamilton and Burr?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hand to hand. So Rudy is a martial artist. We had to make our character have some skills. So we'll use some Krav Maga to settle it if we need to.
Okay. Well, Colin, let's just one more time talk about that website. It's pitdocpress.com, pitdocpress.com. So folks, if you need any information, just go there. Colin, thank you very much, man, for coming on. I really, really appreciate it.
Hey, thank you for having me. It's an honor. And, you know, we didn't even get to talk hockey. I'm a Bruins fan. I didn't want to really go there right away, but, you know, maybe next time. Maybe
I was going to say, next time when we need to talk about book two, we can talk a little hockey. Yeah. How about that?
All right, we'll catch up. We'll see where the cup is. Maybe we'll be lucky. All right, Brian, John, I really appreciate it. This was awesome.
And, yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me on. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up this episode. So if you will, please stick around. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. My conversation with Colin Devonshire, talking about his great graphic novel, By the Time I Get to Dallas. And since the Kickstarter's over, as you heard us mention, you want to get your hands on the book, but you don't know how, keep your eyes at pitdocpress.com. That's P-I-T-D-O-C-press.com. That's where Colin's going to be posting all the details as to where you can pick up a copy of the book, unless you're one of the folks that donated already to the Kickstarter campaign. But nonetheless, thanks, Colin, for coming on. I appreciate it. I think at this time, I should probably let you know that we also have another great sponsor for this episode of the PVD Cast, and that, of course, is Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/PVDcast. As you know, Audible has over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And for you, the listeners of the PVD Cast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the chance to check out their service. So to get your hands on a free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/PVDcast. Once again, that's audibletrial.com/PVDcast to get your free audiobook. Now, I should probably let you know at this particular time where you can get in touch with me if you would like to do so. You can shoot me an email, johnorlando@PVDcast.com. You can find me on Twitter at PVDMVP. You can even leave me a message over on the Facebook page of the PVDcast, that of course being facebook.com/PVDcast. And don't forget, you can get this podcast a variety of places, including PVDcast.com, the online home of yours truly. Or you can find it at iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Spotify, SoundCloud, Google Play, Pod Paradise, the Libsyn Podcast Player, the Echo Network, just basically wherever you find podcasts. All you gotta do is search for PVDcast or PVDcast John Orlando, and you will find it. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe so you never miss an episode. And while you're at it, tell some friends about it as well. Yeah, I would greatly, greatly appreciate that. And so for that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. I thank you for listening, and I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous and stay independent.